corporate greed, they got bigger and bigger until even the DOJ said they should chill on trying to monopolize everything just for more ka-ching, ka-ching by delaying what they then deny by defending their actions as they watch us die. Well, you know, there are so many ways to kill a CEO.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Mexico's new president, Claudia Sheinbaum, celebrated last week the first anniversary of the inaugural run of the Maya train, the mega legacy project of her predecessor and political mentor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. Among the many promises made of the line circling the Yucatan Peninsula tourism mecca and its not yet completed connected interoceanic line was an improvement in the lives of the people where it runs, but that's a hard sell in Chiapas State, where, as my next guest points out, displacements in villages, including Zapatista territories, as a result of armed confrontations and the government indifference and denial to it, and an astonishing increase in violence since the pandemic. Caitlin Manning is an American filmmaker and active participant in the movements against patriarchy, racism, and capitalism. She's author of Resistant Mexico, a series of films documenting resistance to, quote, neoliberal economic expansion and retention of cultural modes, methods, and memory in Mexico. Manning's articles and films can be found at her site, CaitlinManningFilms.com. Welcome back to the program, Caitlin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to speak with you again, and I can't believe it, but it's been more than 5 years since the last time we spoke. And way back then, newly elected Alamo was the great left hope of many in Mexico and abroad, too. Now that mantle falls to his protege, Claudia Sheinbaum. Firstly, Caitlin, how do you think Obrador measured up to the hopes and hypes?
Well, it's a complex picture in the sense that in Obrador, I mean, he's wildly popular. As you probably noticed, Sheinbaum won the elections with a kind of a landslide, and not only presidential elections, but the Morena party that they are both heading was, you know, won a lot in municipal and state elections as well. And so some people would see, let's call it a double-edged sword at this point. I mean, Obrador did a lot of sort of populist social programs. He instituted a monthly stipend to seniors over 65 years old. It's a pittance in term if you're talking about people trying to live independently. But for many people, especially like in rural areas, like, you know, people completely dependent on their older people, completely dependent on their families, et cetera, this was really a big deal. It was a, you know, was an improvement of their lives. So there's that. There's like he gave money to primary school students, et cetera. You know, so there was a few like I see them as kind of like crumbs, like help sent, you know, distributed among certain sort of like niches of the poor in Mexico, but the reality is that for many people that did improve their lives. Although overall, poverty measures, you know, like statistics for like medium level poverty has gotten a little bit better, but the sort of, you know, most impoverished sectors have gotten even poorer. And of course, the rich have gotten richer, a phenomenon that we see all over the world during the Obrador term. Now, so there's that side of it, like these populist measures, which have undeniably helped certain sections of the population. There's a few other things, but we're very limited in time, so I'm going to try to give broad strokes. So there's that. But then, and then, of course, Sheinbaum is a complete, you know, she's mentioned time and time again, she's going to go along with the Obrador program. He's her mentor. She even kind of like her rhythm of speaking is almost similar to Obrador. I mean, she's really taken a lot from him. The major difference is an interesting one also. And I'm speaking of these kind of favorable things at first is like she's basically very she talks about feminism and being a woman. And the neglect of the role of women in society, you know, all constantly in many of her speeches, she addresses like the fact that women are not recognized for their contributions to society. She's promised to implement some fund, you know, like a stipend for women between the ages of 60 and 64. So they, in other words, before they're able to tap into those pensions, to acknowledge, and for women only, to acknowledge their role in their unremunerated role in families. So all that stuff is kind of good. And that really is, you know, a shift, you know, kind of like certainly rhetorically in terms of in an extremely patriarchal macho world, you know, that Mexico is. I mean, you know, as is most of the world. But so there's these things then. But so number one is that they haven't made any like significant difference in terms of poverty levels in Mexico. And in many cases, I forgot to say there's a significant increase in the minimum wage, but partly that was just compensating for, you know, really long periods of not increase. And it's still like incredibly low. It's like $14 a day or something like that. But anyway, so these are what many people would have, you know, has garnered the support of many Mexicans, as well as the left, who see him as kind of a leftist. At the same time, his economic policies, his sort of global, you know, his role in the global economy, let's say, as and Sheinbaum's, continues the neoliberal trend that has been going on for quite some time in Mexico. And of course, there is no attempt to in any way dismantle like the incredibly unequal social realities of Mexico. So I think one way, if we can jump to the so these are the things that people like him for. I think that one way to talk about the other side is to look at this this event that happened a few days ago, where Sheinbaum went to Chiapas, and so the rest of what I'm going to talk about is the area that I frequent and work in, which is the southeast of Mexico, Chiapas, Isthmus of Tehuantepec, Yucatan Peninsula area, and she went down there and attended the initiation of this, the opening of the construction of this eco-tourist park, and flanked by several military people, military uniforms, so several military people who she took great pains to acknowledge how great they were. And she did this in the, you know, talking about this wonderful future for Chiapas, this project is going to bring, you know, economic advancement and jobs, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, completely ignoring the realities on the ground, which is that in the past, at least certainly 5 years, there has been this extraordinary increase in violence, which has affected daily life for everybody. I mean, I go to San Cristóbal de las Casas. I mean, and there's like, it used to be like you could walk any time of day or night. It was very comfortable, very low crime level. Now it's like you have to be really careful when you go out. There's certain times of day, and you know, certainly you don't go out alone at night. There's these gangs of kids on motorcycles that are like threatening people all the time. There's extortions happening in bars. There's the narcos buying up all the criminal gangs, I should say. You know, like interfering in life, and the military, very heightened presence of the military, basically standing down when anything goes down. I mean, there's, I'll mention a couple incidents. I think it was last year, the one that would really made the headlines was there was basically a 4-hour shootout near this big market in San Cristóbal de las Casas, 4-hour shootout. The police, the National Guard, were nowhere to be seen for 4 hours, and usually they're like everywhere, and so, you know, that indicates the collusion between the police forces and the criminal gangs, and so I think it was August or September, there was a march by about 10,000 indigenous people marched from the highlands of Chiapas to Tuxtla Gutierrez, which is the capital, in protest against the government inaction in the face of the increased violence. AMLO and others are always like, oh, you know, the press is exaggerating this to make it look bad. And this is really just conflicts between one of the other narratives is, oh, this is just like conflicts between different indigenous groups who are fighting over land. And so there's this great denial of the reality on the ground there in order to protect the vastly dwindling tourism, at least in the San Cristobal area. I don't know what's happening on the Mayan Riviera. That's probably, you know, more protected, although there's a lot of criminal gang activity going on there as well. I don't know how much it's actually directly affecting tourists. But so anyway, so back to this event. Stop me
Well, you know, San Cristobal, maybe we could just paint a picture. I was there, but, you know, many years ago in the early 90s, and it was a pretty placid little town, loads of tourists like me. And there was no element of danger at all that I recall.
Yeah. Well, if you were there before the Zapatista uprising, you would have seen a different town, because after the uprising, you know, there was a lot of like sympathetic to the Zapatistas. I came around, so there was the sort of culture shifted in the town and it grew a little bit. But yes, it was still so. It's no longer this little village like place. It's a city. But yes, very, very comfortable during the whole time that I've been going down there, which is since 2017. It's felt very comfortable. And now it's like everybody you talk to has either knows somebody or has had an incident. A friend of mine who was just down there recently, yeah, got mugged and had her phone stolen from her. That was, she said that I was lucky. That's all they took.
Well, you wrote to me about a priest being gunned down, yes, after giving mass. And of course that brings to my mind, and maybe certain gray hairs like me, the killing of Oscar Romero in El Salvador in 1980. But
very, very, yeah, that was my next thing I was going to mention, which is, so shortly after this, thousands of indigenous people marched and took, you know, to protest against the violence. There was this this very beloved priest, Padre Marcelo Perez, who already was displaced from his hometown up in Simojovel area because of his role in negotiating the in favor of the displaced people by violent gangs up there. And so he had to move to safeguard. He had moved down to San Cristobal, and he became the main kind of priest in San Cristobal. And he would give he gave the mass up at the Guadalupe Cathedral, which is the main, you know, with the big cathedral up on the hill in San Cristobal. He basically very beloved. He was leaving mass in broad daylight. A bunch of motorcycle kids. I say kids. That's because I'm old, but they're mainly between 12 and 20 years old. They're motorcycle gangs. They just pulled up, shot him in the head, and moved on. And it was like it completely sent shockwaves through the state. There was like, you know, thousands of people marching, you know, all kinds of commemorative events around his death. And that just highlights the, you know, that just like how bad things have gotten that something like this can happen.
Well, clearly, so, yeah. Obrador has made enemies on both the right and the left. I'm looking at a piece in on a news site called The Dialogue, a Leadership for the Americas, which by you might gain is quite a right wing publication. But Arturo Sarukhan, he claims as the board member of the Inter-American Dialogue and as a former Mexican ambassador to the U.S. But he criticizes Obrador on his way out. This is a article from last year, but he says that although his Teflon coated, his public policies haven't proven out, and says that he has sought to weaken Mexico's institutions, eviscerate the agency and bandwidth of the state, and remove its checks and balances so that they cannot restrain him. And he goes on to say that the irony is that those same agencies that Obrador has been undermining can't accomplish the goals that Obrador himself would have them accomplish now. Do you think that's an accurate assessment of what Obrador's done?
No, I don't think so. That's of course the yeah I, that doesn't I don't I don't undermining institutions. To I mean, he's like he what institutions? There is this whole thing about the Justice Department. There's this new constitutional amendment that looks like it's going to go through, where all the justices are going to be now elected by the voters. Supposedly to decrease the corruption in the system, and the American, I don't know, the Americans are just corporations are just freaking out about that. They say that it's going to decrease democracy, blah blah blah. I don't quite understand.
Yeah, isn't that the American model?
Yeah, isn't that what the hell? Like, and how is that? You know, I don't really get it, that side of it. But I mean, it's kind of ludicrous to imagine that voting is going to make it more just. I mean, with the level of corruption that goes on in the voting system. I mean, even Obrador, you know, was famous for his attempt at the presidency in, was it 2008, where the voting, you know, he claimed it was corruption, that he didn't win. So, you know, the idea that this is going to, I mean, I understand the criticisms from the human rights organizations and from that direction on this constitutional reform, because it does look like how that, you know, it's just going to be like the highest bidder is going to win these positions. I mean, there is a major problem with justices. You know, they collude with the criminals, and you know, all kinds of, there's big problems. There's you know, in terms of like prosecuting criminals, but I don't think this is going to really help the problem. But so I don't really see that as being the problem. And it's always crocodile, you know, it's always like such hypocrisy, you know, especially when it's coming from the Americans. But I think that one thing which I would like to touch on, I don't remember what I said about that yet, but yeah, I mentioned that Sheinbaum was flanked by the military, and under Obrador, and this goes against what you just read, there's been an incredible increase in militarization in the country. I mean, it's shocking. The military is now in charge of the Maya train. They're in charge of an airport. There's all these infrastructural projects that they're in charge of. You know, they're actually building this eco tourism center. And it's just like, wait a minute. Since when did the military become, you know, any kind of legitimate actor in the Mexican landscape? I mean, a couple of years ago, the collusion between the military and then we stopped calling them narcos, because they're not just the cartels and all the criminal gangs, which are, you know, there's all different levels they're happening at, from the motorcycle gangs in San Cristobal to the transnational corporations, which are the cartels. Mm-hmm. But the collusion between the military and the criminal gangs has been documented. I don't know if you're familiar with this Guacamaya wiki. They're kind of like a WikiLeaks. They broke into the SEDENA, the National Security Administration, and got like tremendous amounts of emails and stuff like that that people are still going through. And among those are clear evidence of, you know, like high level military people selling, you know, negotiating arms deals for the narcos. And I mean, it's just everybody in Mexico is aware of the collusion between the military and state actors and the criminal gangs. So somehow this idea that this increased militarization is going to make things better is, you know, is delusional. I mean, and it's cynical. I think it's really, it's quite cynical.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Caitlin Manning. Caitlin is an American filmmaker. She's an active participant in the movements against patriarchy, racism, and capitalism, author of Resistant Mexico, a series of films documenting resistance to, quote, neoliberal economic expansion and retention of cultural modes, methods, and memory in Mexico. We're talking in and around the situation in Chiapas generally and Mexico as well, and with the prospects of the new president, the lauded leftist, Claudia Sheinbaum. Well, yeah, I saw Sheinbaum give an address about a week or two ago in front of, like, the Mexican equivalent of America's West Point with all these young military cadets. And it was a rousing and very a nationalistic and patriotic type of speech from what I could gather from it. I'm reading today, the role of the military, AP has a story out by Edgar Clemente and Alba Alamein. Mexico arrests more than 100 local police officers for various abuses and offenses. That was in Chiapas. 92 of those arrested are from the police services in Comitán. But this is where the military went in to get these the surveillance tapes of all these surveillance cameras around the town, and the local police pulled weapons on the federales or the military, and so a standoff took place, a Mexican standoff, if you'll forgive me, and that the arrests followed. It was interesting to me, though, that the locals came out immediately in the confusion and started breaking the surveillance cameras. But what the police were charged with was using the cameras to tip off the drug cartels of raids by the federal police and the army.
There you go. I mean, and, you know, like, AMLO actually created a new police force, the National Guard, and he sent a lot of them down to the southeast of Mexico, presumably to address the criminal situations down there. Well, so there's a lot of them down there by the border, Comitán and Chicomucelo, and that area has become, it's one of the most violent areas in Chiapas right now. And it didn't used to be. And that has been since the National Guard has come there. So what's happened is this is such an old story, right? So the National Guard colludes with certain group criminal gangs, and then the other police collude with these other criminal gangs. They make all these alliances, and then lo and behold, they're fighting each other. So that's the kind of situation. But the one so the violence, you know, nothing has been done, and the government denies it, and then it keeps wanting to make it look like everything's fine, so the tourists keep going down there. But the other thing I just wanted to mention that I think is super important to understand about the area is this, like, massive infrastructural project. Mm-hmm. We used to call them mega projects. Now we need to call them giga projects, because it's going to be it's having a major effect on the area, and it involves, it's super complex. I'll just try to give the broad strokes of it. It's the transismic corridor. So the Isthmus of Tehuantepec is the thinnest part of Mexico between the Atlantic and the Pacific. So the Isthmus is, like, you know, so people are seeing this project as kind of a rival to the Panama Canal, for example, this corridor. That's one aspect of it. But it also ties, and so this vision of this industrial corridor tied into the Maya train, which circulates around the Yucatan Peninsula, which is presumably presumably first and foremost bringing unneeded and destructive tourism to the Yucatan Peninsula. So these two tie in there. It's like a massive project, which their idea now is to build, like, to have it be an industrial corridor, which will supposedly employ a bunch of people, and also of great interest to the Americans, it will create a sort of second border to supposedly capture the migrants that are crossing over the Guatemala border into these jobs, so that they won't go further north into the United States. So that's one of the objectives, and it's just like it involves. It's a major project which is going to be devastating to the area, and it's. not going to help the local population, which I've always held, and I'm sure I said this in the last time 6 years ago, and I feel even more firmly about this, that this part of the world is, it's a global issue, not only because the ecological significance of some of these areas in terms of these massive like forests that are being destroyed, but also the destruction of these cultures, which with their traditions and their ways of life and their knowledge and their environmental knowledge hold, in my opinion, very important keys to the survivability for humans, at least of the planet as a whole. So to me, this is like a global issue, and it's a huge attack, which the government is absolutely committed to. I mean, Obrador was like rabidly pro-Maya train, and apparently Sheinbaum is you know, following in those footsteps.
Well, and the interoceanic this trade line to replace the somewhat troubled Panama Canal, as you mentioned, is ongoing. I'm surprised it's not further along since we talked. I mean, it has been 5 years. The Chinese would have definitely had it finished by now. But sadly, Caitlin, we're fast out of time, and we've not even begun to really scratch into it. How do people get a hold of your work and find out more, do you recommend, about what's going on in Mexico?
Okay, well, there's a series of shorts that I've produced on my website, caitlinmanningfilms.org. Or is it com? It's one of the two. I always forget. Watch out for articles by Don Paley. There's Avispa Media, which produces stuff in English. There's also a blog by Schools for Chiapas, schoolsforchiapas.org, has a blog that talks a lot about the resistance that's going on and in Mexico and in the Mexican Southeast. I noticed that ZNet has a lot of articles. You know,
ZNet was moribund.
No, they're still putting stuff out there. And I mean, it's kind of like some of them I hate, but some of them I like.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Where else have I seen stuff? Avispa Media, Avispa, AVISPA, produces stuff in English. Those are some good outlets. I mean, the mainstream, forget it. La Jornada does, especially the editorial page, but that's in Spanish. So in English, you know, there is definitely a dearth of information on this stuff.
Well, it is .com, CaitlinManningFilms.com. Don Paley is DawnPaley. I had Dawn on many years ago. I'd sort of forgotten about her.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago now. Avispa. Media, AVISPA Media. As I say, Caitlin, there's way more we can talk about, and I'm sorry we don't have the full hour today to get into it, because I love Mexico from my experiences there, and it's very disheartening to see that it's so much trouble. It persists down there, and so much injustice, but well, what are you going to do? Thanks a lot for coming on, and thanks to Diana Johnstone in Paris. That's all I've got for this week. Until the next time, thanks again, Caitlin.
All right, thanks.
How many lives have been lost so they could keep down the cost of running a business on our backs while raking in the stacks and stacks the profits that they stole from us while we're trying to live here under the bus? This kind of thing can't go on forever. You don't have to be so clever by delaying what they then deny, by defending their actions as they watch us die. Well, you know, there are so many ways to kill a CEO. To grow till it ran the show.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.